Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you all today. One of the things I really want to stress is that heat and drought actually kind of coincide together. And so it's really interesting whenever we see research that actually deals with one or the other, but don't really take both into consideration. So we wanted to do kind of an experiment to see what would happen if we did that. First of all, in Arkansas, we have a large expanse of our cotton yields. This graph here is from 1980 until current. We show for the blue line irrigated yields, and for the red lines we actually show non-irrigated yields. And for the irrigated, we're looking at about 12 pounds an acre per year, versus the dry line, we're looking at about 10 pounds an acre per year. So even without proper irrigation, such as like with our furrow irrigation, we're actually still seeing those increases through better management practices, better fertilization, better pesticides, herbicides, and better cultivars. But cotton still has a sensitivity. Its ideal growth occurs between 20 and 30 degrees centigrade. For those who are not familiar, that's about 68 and 86 degrees Fahrenheit. And for many regions within the growing areas, that actually has exceeded exceedingly high in times. However, the maximum thermal efficiency is really only about 23 to 32 degrees centigrade, so only a little bit more. And it seems that what it is is the enzymes that are actually responsible for photosynthesis when this actually begins to decrease. And as such, we have increased fruit shed and decreased yields accordingly. Also, night temperatures can also have an effect. We can have increased respirations at night. That's increased respirations can utilize ATP that can be utilized elsewhere during the day. In combination, we have the water stress. The water stress, we actually do see a significant reduction in lint yield. Pettigrew back in 2004 noticed that for a drought caused reduced bulbs by about one-fifth. And this was actually what caused the reduction in yield. But we also have reduced photosynthetic rates. That's due to a decreased metal conductance. And this has been known for quite some time. I'm just trying to establish where we're going with this. And we also have increased sucrose content. This is actually the result of the temperature liability and also the drought liability of the sugar phosphate synthase activity. And that decreases, thus increasing the sucrose content, which can function as an osmolyte as well as a protein protectant. And that's something that's actually really interesting to think about. All the proteins that may be actually destroyed or altered via high temperatures can also be protected with sucrose. So let's look at our timing. Well, in Arkansas, cotton is planted on average in the first few weeks of May. Thus, flowering occurs during the peak of the summer season in the United States, where we have in Arkansas some of the highest temperatures and the least rainfall. So this study, we wanted to ask, what would high temperatures and drought have on the short-term biochemical effects of cotton? So we went to our hypothesis, and that hypothesis was that the cursory literature review suggests that both high temperatures and drought cause significant biochemical disruptions. Therefore, both factors simultaneously should produce a heightened disruptive response compared to either exclusively. So we went to a growth chamber study. We wanted to make sure this was analyze this appropriately here. With two chambers, we have a control chamber and a heat stress chamber. And inside each chamber, we have a fully irrigated with a water stressed factor. And membrane leakage and fluorescence were actually obtained daily. And from there, we had a subtending leaf photosynthesis as well as the carbohydrates at stress and recovery. Now, one thing to make mention is that all plants were grown until first flower. So these plants had been within their environments for a long period of time. And whenever we're at first flower for the treatments, such as for the high stress, for the heat stress, we encouraged that at first flower. And we also initiated the drought. So we actually ceased watering for 24, 48 hours. And at that time, we reduced in the 2-liter pots the amount of water considerably. After that, we took our measurements, we watered again. And in 24 hours, things recovered very quickly. There in the heat water with the heat and water stress in the environmental chamber, we see that we have incredible flaccid state here of the leaves. However, 24 hours, perks right back up. Again, visually, we couldn't really notice any difference between that and the control. But we start looking at membrane leakage. Membrane leakage is incredibly important. Think about our thylakoids that we have for our photosynthetic rates. Well, we've noticed that after the post-treatment, heat stress actually showed the most significant damage. Water stress was actually not so significant, which is indicated by the green. And with the purple, we have the combination, heat and water stress. So what we're still seeing is we're after about 4 to 5 days, all of them are coinciding to about where the control is. So we're actually allowing the membrane to recover over time. Thus, it's adjusting. And with that as well, we have the electron transport rates. And the highest was in the well-watered heat stress. And the lowest was actually in the well-watered control. And I will explain as to why we may think that here. But the most significant change over time, the one that actually had some of the more interesting characteristics, was actually the water stress control. What was to me is that with heat stress, you actually have an increase in certain factors. And I'll get to that in just a moment. But water stress also causes some changes within the cell. And the photosynthesis here, and what's interesting to me is if I looked at the well-watered treatment, the amount of electron transport rate is actually increased higher than any other treatment there. With a subtending leaf photosynthesis, down deep in the canopy, where about 60% of all of the metabolites come from for the developing ovary, developing flower, water stress and control were statistically similar. However, heat stress actually had a higher amount whenever you're looking at the control. So what that tells me is this, is that whenever you have heat stress, you actually increase the photophosphorylation. You increase the amount of, and that's the way for the plant to be able to create ATP without the use of water. So without using water, it's still able to manage to create the ATP, thus allowing it to still manage to make enough energy to be able to hopefully carry on just for a little bit longer. Heat stress is known for this characteristic. So that takes me back to the electrolyte leakage. What's so important about this? Well, we have a turgid cell and a flaccid cell. We've all learned about this in beginning biology class, right? Well, the rapid heat and dehydration from the lack of soil moisture was actually possibly protective. We have is that a loss of water led to the flaccid cells. Hence, that reduced the damage to the membrane structure through a contraction. That contraction actually caused the lipids to actually fall closer together. Normally, whenever you have a turgid cell, you're pushed apart. Whenever you have heat, you actually have an increase in the amount of mobility that you have. With a turgid cell, you actually kind of lock that in place. So I wanted to point. So we talked about sucrose earlier. And I wanted to point this out: is that on the day of stress, we actually show a very significant watering temperature response. When we're showing that where the normal control actually had the least amount. Therefore, we're showing is that under stress conditions, even when watering or dry land, we're still seeing high amounts of sucrose. Thus, the protective nature of it. Hence, that may be a possible. But if we actually kind of go into the day of recovery, even though some would say 0.09 might actually be there, you just kind of close one eye or take out a couple of particular points, that's still not showing the same kind of recovery. Hence, with the watering that was dry land, stressed, and temperature that was high, we're still showing the high amounts of sucrose, hence acting as an osmolyte protectant. So we kind of get to those conclusions here, and these conclusions are pretty simple. On the hypothesis, we received an overall rejection. The overall rejection of everything that we said, because honestly, we were not seeing these things actually working exclusively in conjunction. So high temperature stress and drought stress produce similar responses. Membrane leakage indicates that high temperatures, though, are more damaging. High temperatures increase the amount of damage to the membrane, but only under watering conditions. Therefore, the greater photosynthesis and the ATR rates in well-watered high temperatures, which is also interesting because, again, that corresponds to the non-cyclic the cyclic phosphorylation that we had that didn't include, that doesn't necessitate the need of water to function. And sucrose increased. Thus, sucrose, we should see in basic times of any kind of stress, should also increase because of the reduction in the sucrose phosphate enzyme. That inability for that to work increases the amount of sucrose, hence acting as a protectant. So with that, I'd like to finish and make acknowledgments for everybody on my committee. Research team past and present, several of these have gone on to bigger and better things. And also for Cotton Incorporated for allowing research and funding for this. And with that being said, I would like to open the floor to any questions that you guys may have. Thank you very much. We have two, so we'll go in the back first, sir. You're asking, the question is does the sucrose increase in drought-tolerant varieties? Actually, from what I've been able to see is that sucrose concentration really remains constant. If you well water something, even in a drought-stress variety, a drought-tolerant variety, you're going to see a maintenance carryover. However, once the drought happens, the sucrose should change. Now, the only one that I have actually been able to look at is the VH26L, and that is a very drought, it's supposedly a drought-hardy plant, and we have seen that sucrose levels do go up along with proline and a few others. Now, characteristic to that with, say, a drought-sensitive, now if you make a single-point study where you're actually just shocking immediately and then actually take a look at it, yeah, sucrose levels really are much, much better in the VH26L. However, we're still thinking that maybe we could see an acclimation effect. What if we hit that a couple of times? Would we still be able to represent those genes accordingly? So, thank you. And real fast, sir, I'm going to get you. Actually, yes, we do. We do have heat, but in the interest of time, I actually did not allow that to be here. I actually removed that slide a little bit before. But no, on the upper leaf canopy temperatures, nothing was actually running above 30 degrees centigrade. Matter of fact, 28 centigrade was the highest temperature that we found. And that was pretty stable. In the control environment, temperatures were actually running about 3 to 4 degrees cooler than the ambient temperature in the control chamber. And thus, at the most, we were seeing about between 12 and 14 degrees cooler than actually the heat stress. Now, and that's only for the well-watered. As soon as you actually started to move over into the water stress, you saw temperatures do begin to creep up. However, because of the way that the leaves basically collapsed on themselves and bring that flaccid state, they weren't really being exposed to the high temperature from the lights anymore. So therefore, they were actually they were still cool relatively to the ambient temperature. They were not running at about 42 degrees centigrade. They were actually running in the about 35, 36. So they were still below. Yes, sir. So I'd hate to ask, but could you please repeat the question? It's something like, how did I measure sucrose? Well, what we did is we just used a glucose assay. Essentially, what we did is we basically took the leaf, the dry weight. From the dry weight, then we basically processed it accordingly to extract the amount of soluble sugars out of that. And then from there, once we got the sucrose, we analyzed first the glucose and the fructose. And then we actually broke down the sucrose into its forms of glucose and fructose, and we measured those accordingly. And then from that, we're able to do simple combination of subtraction and be able to come up with the amount of sucrose concentration that we have within that particular leaf disc that we took. Yes, sucrose levels do increase. Sucrose levels do increase because, and this has been stated in much in literature. Oh, Trehalose. Oh, I am very sorry. Honestly, I do not know. We never actually investigated anything along those lines. But Trehalose has been shown to have some sort of effects with osmolality as well, just like maltose and a few others as well. So I would imagine that it should go up. That would be a really interesting thing to look for here in the future.
Just take one last question.
Yes, sir. I can restart it if you'd like. Yes.
How do you control for high VDE effects on your crop? How do you control for that?
Vapor pressure. Honestly, what we do is in this particular instance, we really don't actually consider that in these experiments. Now, vapor pressure deficit is important to monitor, but well, we don't have any measurements, and so what we did an initial study just to see what kind of initial effects would happen. We wanted to take the worst approach we could come up with, which was absolute drought, absolute irrigation, and then we also monitored the worst heat possible that we could come up with for Arkansas that's usually happens, and then also a normal temperature. So for a vapor pressure differential that we're seeing, this is the initial study. We're still moving on forward to move from there. And we could definitely incorporate more of that, looking at maybe soil moisture as well, also taking some analysis with some more photosynthesis measurements to be able to really kind of pull in some more data.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.